Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Monday's episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am Craig Fowler, and joining me today to help me talk through all six Scottish Premiership fixtures is Mr. Craig Anderson. Hello, Craig.
How? I'm American Indian now. Hello, Craig. How are you doing? Is what I was going to ask.
I don't know what happened here. You should be malfunctioning for a second.
Yeah, I just lost the ability to speak, which is not a good idea when you're on a podcast with two people for 1 hour.
Yeah, so hopefully this is the only time that happens, but I'm sure it won't be. We're not always the most eloquent on here in terms of getting our words out. We can often stumble, often say the word A, often forget what we're going to say. We're not the most polished of professionals, but I think that's why a lot of people love us. It's part of our charm.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I've ever been told I have charm before, but we'll take it, Craig.
Everybody has a little bit of charm. It's all in the eye of the beholder, I suppose.
Well, I've not found the right beholders yet, but maybe I'm in luck now.
Cue everybody getting in touch on Twitter saying, "Oh, you've got plenty of charm, Craig." Oh,
yeah, no, it's like that thing that it's mostly women, but men do it as well, that it's the false modesty thing where they're just basically saying, "Oh, I'm really fat," or "I'm really this," just to get people saying, "No, you're fine, you look great," all that. Yeah. An interesting path we've taken here.
Yes, I'm trying to think of a link between thinking they're fat but actually being all right. No, Celtic won the weekend. there's a seamless link for you. Celtic beat Aberdeen on Sunday, 2-1. Let's start off with that one because I made an arse of things earlier in terms of we split the three games in terms of watching three each, and I accidentally watched one of the games you'd watch, which ended up being this one. So we've both watched this one. So apologies to Dundee United and Ross County fans. Neither of us watched all your game, but we have both seen the highlights, so we'll talk about that at the end. But yeah, let's begin with the matchup at Tawdry. A huge result for Celtic that still only keeps them in sixth place in the table. But had they not won this one, with kind of everything that's gone on, that their terrible form, especially the bad kind of league form as well, and dropping as low down as sixth place, and so low that they won on Saturday and still remain there. Had they managed to not get that final goal, or had Scott Brown scored that header, or had, you know, Ramirez been able to finish a chance when the ball bounced back up from Johnny Hayes' shot, then you're really talking about, I mean, even as early in this career, and even with everything he's had to deal with, you're still going to have a lot of people asking questions of whether Postecoglou is the right man for the Celtic job. And they've managed to at the very least, delay that question another couple of weeks. And plus, as I was kind of saying this to Joel when we'd done the stats podcast that released on Saturday morning on the Patreon, that's patreon.com/terracepodcast, I said that I had the kind of feeling that Celtic were about to go on a bit of a run, because I just think they've got, with Furuhashi back and Jota now looking a pretty decent addition as well, I think they've got too much at the front end for a number of teams, and I think you'll see them go on a run and get themselves up to the right end of the table. But they needed to stop the rot, and in a way, when at Pittodrie, even if Aberdeen are a bit rubbish this campaign, it's still a decent victory to get.
Yeah, and so it was a first and foremost a good result for Celtic, and I agree with you in terms of what they've got at the front end. Although I would say you could have a car where you could put all the best engine, the best everything in the front end, but if you don't have any wheels at the back, it's not going to go very far. And there is a bit of an analogy there with this Celtic team, because the quality of defenders that they have at the club, or maybe not at the club, is not fair, because there's players who can come in and will improve things, but the quality of defender they've got in the field, there are three of the four in the back four that are just fundamentally not good enough yesterday. And you saw moments from each of the three of them. Carter Vickers, the jury's out on, but might be okay. But the performances like from Ralston, who had a wee purple patch for a month or two and is reverted essentially back to what we expected, which is that he doesn't do much on the ball. His crosses were pretty poor. Montgomery defensively looked an absolute nightmare. He did put in a lovely ball for the winner, and that has to be acknowledged. And Starfelt, for the fee they paid for him, for what the reputation he's come in with, does seem to almost be getting worse as time has gone on, and maybe that's with what's around him. Now, obviously, Juranovic, Julian, and even Taylor coming back, all three of those players would improve that defence immeasurably, and maybe that's, you know, what they need. Because, yeah, the front end of the other issue is nothing protecting the defence, which is why he's had to dig to the depths of trying to play near beat on there again, which didn't work, I don't think. At the front end are breathtaking at times. Some of the football that they do play when they get into that final third is really good. Furuhashi, for me, is one of the most exciting players to watch that we've had in the league for a long time. And he obviously, he does a lot of things that other players don't do, and scoring with his chest would be one of them. And yeah, it was at that point, I thought they're going to go on and absolutely steamroller Aberdeen today, because the quality that they have on show and the way they were playing, you kind of feared, especially with the state of Aberdeen's defence, which we might go on to, particularly centre-backs. But then second half, they didn't come out at all, and Aberdeen, I thought, were going to go on and win the game. The way it was going, it kind of was reminiscent of that 3-3 game last season, where it just seemed to kind of swing back and forward so often. But this time around, Celtic managed to grab the victory, which at the end of the day is all that matters, and we can talk about that a lot later on. You can play all the nice football or whatever badly, it doesn't matter. When you win a game, you get away with it, and that's what happened for me.
Yeah, going back to your kind of point about the defence, the problem with the defence is that it's twofold. One, we're not even entirely sure if many of them are any good defenders, but two, they have to be. They don't fit at all into what Postecoglou wants to do in terms of, like, so none of them look, well, Carter Vickers looks all right, I guess. But even then, he doesn't look exactly Christopher Ayer, put it that way. In terms of playing the ball for the back, both centre-halves don't look particularly great at it. And then you've got the full-backs. Now, the full-backs of Celtic are probably the weakest area of the team, even weaker than centre-halves. And that's really bad, because the way that Postecoglou plays, where these guys are being asked to move inside as inverted fullbacks and play almost as centre midfielders, and then kind of allow the centre midfielders to split out. It's kind of helped Ralston. I think Ralston's been better this season in that system than he would have been otherwise, but he's still not that great. I think it's fair to say he's come back to earth a little bit since his great start at the beginning of the campaign. And you're really wanting, for Postecoglou's system to work perfectly, or to work at its kind of optimum, you need those guys, you need the fullbacks to be two of the better players in the team, not the weakest. And I mean, if you're comparing Celtic to Rangers, it's like, it's wild. Like, you could almost, I mean, it's probably not quite as clear cut, but I think a lot of Rangers fans would certainly argue that they've got four fullbacks that are better than Celtic's best fullback. and that's it's a big issue that's not really going to go away. But I do just have a little bit more faith than you do that they will start to put together results and start to steamroll some teams at least and get themselves up into the top three.
The one thing I would say, I think you're right in terms of, like, it's very clear from watching Celtic what their plan is. You never get the sense of watching them and thinking like they're a shambles, like the way you did last season, where you're like, what is Lennon sending them out to do? At the very least, whether the tactics are right, whether the players are right for it, you do get the sense that what they're trying to do is clear and obvious. And I would say that you know, the inverted fullbacks, it's a phrase I have to say I'd never heard before, and I was confused at the start of the season when I heard they were playing it. I was like, what are they playing, the left back at right back and vice versa? Because that's what, if you think inverted wingers, it's usually a right winger on the left and so on. It makes, I mean, inverted really means infield, and that makes sense. But you saw that with Montgomery for the goal. Aberdeen's right-hand side got completely bamboozled by Montgomery's position. I think that he takes up, he appears from a kind of infield, midfield role, and that's what gave him all that space. Because you see Calvin Ramsey tucking in. I think it's Turnbull that he's following, and he tucks right in with Turnbull. And then Johnny Hayes has Montgomery kind of coming up towards him, but also I think it's Jota on the outside of him. It might not have been Jota, but it was someone. And Johnny Hayes makes the decision.
It was Kyogo.
Oh yeah, it was. Sorry, you're right. I forgot he'd shifted out to that side at that point. Hayes makes a curious decision, rather than picking one of them to track, to just stand still and let them both go. I mean, it's like, I could understand if he'd track Kyogo's run and expected, because I think he did expect, he was pointing at Ramsey ahead of the move to get out to Montgomery. And I could understand if Hayes had followed Kyogo's run. You go, right, well, he's tried something, he's kind of tracking a man, whatever. Technically, the fullback's your man, Johnny, but you have to shift things around and all that. But to just stand there, let them both go, it looks absolutely terrible defensively. And then Montgomery's got all the time in the world in it, and it's a wonderfully weighted pass across, because it's very easy to lash at those balls. Plenty of fullbacks would have done that. So for all the criticism I've given him defensively, like, that was a really nice contribution, and he has contributed a couple of times in an attacking sense. I think it's probably his strength, but he's a level below what's needed. But nonetheless, he plays it across, and it's well tucked away. And Tom Rogic made the difference coming off the bench. He's the player that's able to pick that little pass, and he was able to just, the way he moves with the ball, you don't see many other players. It's so upright. And yeah, he added a little bit when it looked like it was all kind of falling apart a bit for Celtic. So it's a very difficult game to analyse, I would say, because there were so many parts to it, so much incompetence in amongst so much like really good play. And yeah, that as I say, that at least that quirk of their tactics does work in some ways.
I agree with your point about Rogic. I think there was two occasions, kind of the goal kind of came about like this as well, but there was two occasions before then, kind of in the minutes preceding it, where Celtic played a number of passes, like going from side to side, but doing so kind of like within 30 yards of Aberdeen's goal and kind of pinning them back. And you're used to seeing that from Celtic when they play somebody like Aberdeen, even as somebody as good as Aberdeen, you're used to seeing that for a lot of the game. And that stood out to me, because I was like, shit, I think this is the first time they've done this all half. Like, they really didn't kind of match that kind of, I mean, dominance would maybe be a little bit too strong for the first half performance, but certainly the kind of team that was on top. But the second half, Aberdeen came out much better. They were maybe a bit too passive in the opening 45 minutes. So the second half, they kind of upped their intensity off the ball. I thought they took more chances on it. They were less kind of lazy and just kind of maybe trying to go direct to Ramirez. That, even when they did that, started to actually work a wee bit better as well. But they managed to, they were playing more kind of passes through the lines and attempting more like that, and it kind of gave them more of a foothold in the game. But Celtic really kind of struggled in that second period until Rogic's introduction, and then they were able to start kind of penning Aberdeen back in a little bit, with Aberdeen still showing a bit more threat than they had in the opening half on the kind of at the other end. But that definitely kind of took the play up a notch. But let's move to Aberdeen. So they could be, I think the second half performance in particular, they could be pretty happy with it. And because, I mean, it's a Celtic team that's, yes, it's wounded. So you're maybe thinking you missed a great chance to, you know, to stick the knife in further. But at the same time, they do have a number of great players. They're still fancied to win the game. They're still odds on to win the game. And you, second half especially, gave it a good go and shown maybe that there's some kind of green shoots of recovery for them as well. But then again, they're down in ninth place and a defeat's a defeat and pressure is increasing further still on Stephen Glass.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand what he thinks he's doing with a centre-back pairing. Like, it's like Pedro Caixinha's Rangers. What was absolutely terrible about them? Let's chuck them both in together. Because it felt like it was either Bates or McCrory for a long time or one of the centre-halves in that team, and neither of them really coped with that. And again, yes, Aberdeen is a step down from what's expected of Rangers, or definitely Aberdeen now is, but that period, David Bates just isn't good. I've said it forever. I just don't rate him at all. I don't think he's a good defender. You saw him for the goal. Absolutely no clue where Kyogo was. McCrory has lots of the things that could make a good centre-half. Like you see Jack Hendry or something, he's not a million miles away from that type of player. But he's been much better in midfield, and Aberdeen could do with him in midfield, but they never addressed a centre. Considine, who, yes, he's a physical guy and all that, but Considine's a wee bit of a more cerebral centre-half. He thinks about the game a little bit. If he's the one that goes out injured, why are you not replacing him with like someone a bit more similar to him rather than Bates, who's your more like Gallagher-like centre-half? And I know Gallagher's not exactly made a great start there, but he's better than Bates. So there's just a lot going on there. And then you saw in the second half what I think they are good at, which is playing in tight spaces, passing the ball around, working openings, as in, and when I say working openings, I mean it very loosely, working the ball out of tight spaces and defence into positions where you have midfielders and attackers facing the opponent's goal, which I think is hard to do sometimes. That can be a challenge. What they haven't done and what they didn't do enough, again, was really create clear-cut chances. They did have some chances. I think the Hayes one that you mentioned was the most obvious one, where I think a better striker than Ramirez finishes that in the rebound. But yet again, for all the nice play that they did put together in that period, they weren't peppering Joe Hart with shots. They had some chances. And again, yeah, Celtic and all that, but that defence was there to be got at. And he certainly realised that, because he, I thought, had, from an attacking point of view, a really good second half against Montgomery. But yeah, I didn't see a lot that they should be positive about from yesterday's game, if I'm honest, because I think even though, yeah, you can say it's Celtic, it's not Brendan Rodgers Celtic, and it's probably not even Neil Lennon Celtic of 2019-20. Yeah, it's probably slightly better than Neil Lennon Celtic of last season, but that wouldn't be hard. And as much as you can say the decision to get rid of McInnes was probably the right time, I felt like this was inevitable when he left. They were never going to get someone as good as him, because there haven't been managers as good as him. Like, so it's kind of what you expect from Aberdeen, and what they have to just make sure they do is that the fall kind of stops at 7th or 8th or 6th and not 10th, 11th, and, you know, there has to be a risk of that, because once you start losing, it's very easy to keep losing, and a team that plays the way they do is much more likely to just completely the arse fall out of it, whereas if you're grinding things and all that, you know, you'll pick up the point here and there. But playing like that and being that open and being that poor defensively, you don't necessarily get the points. And so I don't know, I mean, yeah, I feel like you were thinking something more positive for them, but I'm not sure I had much positive to say about them.
I know, that is fair. I still think we should respect the opponent. Like, even if it's a Celtic team in very poor form, it's a Celtic team with very good attacking players, and like I say, they were still fancied to win the game. So, yeah, I mean, I still don't think that Stephen Glass... But it's a weird thing, because at the start of the season, I thought they looked really good, and, like, I thought he'd drawn up quite a good game plan to go with the kind of players that he'd signed, and it was almost like... To me, it's almost felt like they've added too many men kind of at the end of the window, and he doesn't really know how to fit them all in now. Like, he knew he kind of had a system for fitting these guys in when the initial seven were signed, and now he doesn't look like he does. And So yeah, he still might figure it out. I'm not completely thinking that he's definitely the wrong man for the job, and this is going to continue for most of the rest of the season, where they're going to struggle and be lucky to finish top six. But it's also, I'm not betting against that either.
you just look at, are Rangers better than them? Yes. Are Celtic better than them? Yes. Are Hearts better than them? Yes. Are Hibs better than them? Yes. Are St Johnstone better than them? I think so. Are Motherwell better than them? I think so. That's immediately out of the top six, right?
I think they've got the potential. If he manages to figure out a system, the one that kind of worked out as well at the start of the season as it does with the kind of extra players they brought in, they definitely have a better ceiling than Motherwell or St Johnstone.
I agree with that. It's just I don't want to be a broken record on him. I don't get good vibes off Glass at all.
I just wanted to mention one thing before we move on. It was about the defence. You pulled up Bates for the opening goal. I think McCrory's really poor as well, because he really doesn't recognise the danger out wide when Turnbull goes to take the quick throw in, because Turnbull recognises he's got a 2-on-1 against young Jack McKenzie, and McCrory's just there and he could come over and help stop the cross, but he just kind of drifts back into the box and really does nothing, because there was no Celtic player there for him to mark. It's really kind of poor, like, anticipation, positioning, whatever you want to call it, in terms of defensive front. He should be recognising that's what he needs to do at that moment, but he didn't, and they got beat. From the people who turned a niche Scottish football podcast into a critically acclaimed TV show on the BBC, it's Review from the Terrace, a pop culture podcast network.
Hello and welcome to the Still Game podcast. My name is Bethany Tennick.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Scottish Rewatchable.
Hello and welcome to Review from the Turnbuckle.
Debating the best in movies, iconic TV shows, classic albums, peak era wrestling, and so much more.
Some intern got fired for that, like, be like, Jared!
And what would you have done?
Loved it. What a moment. What a moment.
Review from the Terrace brings together a collection of professionals, pals, misfits, and special guest interviews.
The one and only Ewan Angus.
Big G Telfer.
Director of Still Games, Michael Hines.
That's Review from the Terrace, a newly created podcast network with at least two shows dropping every week.
All right, neighbour, good to see you, man. Good to see you, man. It's been a long time, man.
Many people will say it's the biggest moment in the history of wrestling.
It's about 35.
Find us on Acast or wherever you get your podcasts. Right, where to go now? Will it be boring and do Rangers and Celtic right at the top? Yeah, let's do it. Everybody's talking about this bloody foul anyway, so we might as well do it. Right, Rangers 2, Hibs 1. Rangers go back to the top of the league. Again, another performance which wasn't all that convincing, as they have to come from a goal down to beat Hibs, and Hibs had 10 men for, it's like over an hour it was in this game, after Ryan Poitras was sent off. That's what everybody's talking about on social media today. Craig, was it a red card?
At the very least, it's a borderline decision. I can't understand when people are like, oh, it's not even a foul. I think it's a red card, personally. I wouldn't say it's like a nailed-on, definite red card. It's like, you know, put 60-40 on it. If you look at the things that you're looking at a red card, is he out of control? Absolutely, he's out of control with that tackle. The pace of the tackle is very, very high. Now, you can understand the pace of the tackle being high because he's trying to get across to stop an attack. So you can take that as mitigation, but it doesn't really matter. The things that maybe count against it being a red is he doesn't make a great deal of contact with Aribo. It is a genuine attempt to play the ball. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So you're kind of balancing these things out, but I've said it over and again, like, when you're someone like Poitras and he's worked really hard, I would say deliberately, to kind of cultivate this image of being a hard man, of being, you know, aggressive, of being all that, and you've seen him specifically do it in games involving Rangers quite a lot.
Well, I actually wrote about this recently. I think he's kind of calmed it down a bit this season. I've not seen him go wild into many tackles, and so it was obviously typical that I wrote it last week, and the first game after that, he was flying in.
I was out a run this morning, Craig, and I was listening to the stats thing that you and Joel did, and there was at least two or three things that were said across that I was like, in light of this weekend's football, were quite amusing. But that was one of them. I think one of you was talking about, I'm toning it down and all that. But yeah, so that's all kind of things that play a part there. And One thing I would say is, like, we've been talking this week, and God forbid, like, I hope it doesn't happen, but they're obviously talking about VAR coming in and stuff like that. VAR would have made no difference there. There's not a chance VAR is overturning that decision, because there is enough about it for it not to be a clear and obvious error.
Yeah.
If it turned out that Ryan Portis had not touched the rebound and was actually sliding in along the ground and all of that, then fair enough. But it wasn't. It was high. It was fast. Some referees would have given a red. Some might not have done. And so VAR would have been, would have made absolutely no difference to that decision whatsoever. Therefore, it shouldn't come into the discussion. And that's part of the reason, again, people think it's going to magically improve Scottish football or something like that. It's not. Most of the decisions are going to be the same, and they're still going to be endless carping about them. For me, it's a really stupid challenge, first and foremost, because you can talk about, and I don't necessarily buy into this, but if you genuinely believe as a football fan that when you go to Ibrox and Parkhead, the refs are out to get you, and the refs are wanting to, you know, when you go 1-0 up, they want to even it up, they want to get Rangers or Celtic back into the game. If that's the mindset that you actually have, well, don't give them an easy excuse to do so by making a challenge like that. It was a dangerous attack, but it wasn't an attack that required that type of challenge. It was kind of going a bit wide and all of that type of stuff. So yeah, for me, it's just really rash and really stupid. And as I say, I think some days he might have got away with a yellow, but it's not, for me, I think it's a red.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same as you. I kind of thought, like, for me, it kind of came down to, was there much contact? Because I wasn't sure there was any contact at all, but Aribo stays down for a bit and needs kind of physio treatment. Now, that's not like, that could easily be, you know, playing it up kind of thing, but you know, typically the red card's already out. You can just stay down for a little bit, like, and then get up and limp around. Like,
there's no opposing fans in the ground. You don't need to bother.
I know.
They only ever do it for that reason. Try and avoid getting booed.
So, like, and he was down for a couple of minutes, like, as well. Like, there was at least a minute. So there was a wee bit of treatment going on there. So I think he's maybe caught him slightly where he's just kind of nicked him with his studs or something. And that would be enough, because of the way he goes in with the rest of the... If he doesn't make any contact at all, then it's not... Then yeah, they've maybe got a point in saying that I think the referee would still give a foul for kind of dangerous play, but it wouldn't be a red card. But if there is just a slight bit of contact in the way he's gone in, then I think it is a red card, because he has gone in very heavy. He's gone in clearly above the ball. But it's just, the argument online is just so tedious. It's like it's just everybody with confirmation bias, really. Like, Rangers fans are adamant it's like the worst foul ever, because they're looking at the camera angles behind each of the goals, where you should see his kind of straight leg out in front, and obviously do use screenshots to make it look even worse. But then Hibs fans are looking at the angles that are kind of more side on, but it doesn't even look like a foul. So it's like they're both just taking each one and going, I would prefer this to be the case. So I'm gonna look at this angle and say, right, this is the definitive 100%. I'm just gonna ignore the rest.
Which is, yeah, it's par for the course, I think, and it's, yeah. I almost instinctively cringe every time I see a player getting sent off for a penalty being given in a game involving Rangers or Celtic, whether it's for or against them, because you just know it's going to dominate for, like, the next couple of days, and bad take after bad take. And
it was that episode of Sports Sound where they talked about Rangers getting a penalty against Motherwell for, like, 40 minutes or something.
And it's sometimes even like I don't remember the one you're talking about, but it can be like when they're 3-0 up or something, it's like, who cares? But the
I think Rangers ended up winning that game about 7-0 or something.
Yeah. The problem is it then detracts from the cases where there is a genuinely rotten decision, because it's like the boy that cried wolf, isn't it? You're just, you've got nowhere left to go if you're doing a 40-minute Sports Sound special and a penalty and a 7-0 defeat. Yeah, more generally on the game, I think it's really frustrating for Hibs, but it's kind of in keeping with their character over the last 2 or 3 years. They simply cannot give themselves nice things. It's like, go 1-0 up at Ibrox. Rangers are absolutely there for the taking. I mean, you know that from the way they've been playing and stuff like that, and obviously their form has not been good. they have a couple of half chances. I think the one when Boyle gets played through and you think he's maybe going to get on the end of it. If he gets on that and, you know, and he makes it two, it's a big difference. And then they self-destruct, and have self-destructed so often in these big games. You can look back through several of them last season. And then it's that kind of, yeah, they're doing this kind of poor us act, and it wears off very quickly. They are, to me, Jack Ross is turning into Derek McInnes 2.0 in that respect. He'll finish third. It's probably a really good achievement. He's clearly a very good manager, but he won't get the big results because time and again, there's a mentality issue.
Yeah, I suppose that's a good point. One thing I wanted to bring up for this game was kind of Jack Ross's use of the kind of Hibs formation after the red card. So I was curious as to what they'd do, because usually most teams go 4-4-1, and I think that's stupid. I think it's been showed in recent years the best thing to do is to go 4-3-2. But Hibs obviously started with the back three. So he actually went 5-2-2 to start with. With Cadden and Doig still remaining as the wing backs, and he left Nisbet and Boyle up top with Doyle, Hayes and Newell in behind. And then he changed it for the start of the second half, and he went to a 4-3-2. And I thought it was a bit curious. And I can only think that he thought, with Rangers pressure, even if we defend well and the players they have, they're likely to get a goal or two goals or whatever. So we need to maybe be doing a bit more in attack. So we maybe need somebody else in a central position to support the attack, because there wasn't really much to kind of help Boyle and Nisbet, because the two centre midfielders had to do a lot of work kind of defensively. And obviously kind of, especially if you're down to 10 men, you're protecting a goal. Cadden and Doig weren't really getting that forward up as much as they were early in the game. So I kind of wondered if that was the reason, but then it was quite clear from the start of the second half, and I didn't really have enough time to properly analyse to see whether this was the formation or whether it was just kind of Rangers stepping up a game. But Rangers were much better after the start of the second half, like right out the gate. They pinned Hibs back for long periods and really kind of put a lot of balls in the box, asked a lot of questions of the defence. And then Jack saw this and he changed it back again. He went back to the 5-2-2, but he did so just before the equaliser. And Cadden is the one that's kind of closest to Roof to start with. It looks like he's picking up Roof, but then doesn't. And he's kind of more preoccupied with keeping his eye on, I think it must have been Barisic and Aribo, who were still in the wing. Now, there's problems with other parts of the defence. Hanlon tells Newell to track the run of Hadji and doesn't, and that kind of freezes Hanlon, so he can't drop back to where he was beside McGregor. But even then, I'm not entirely sure whether he would have got back in time anyway to allow McGregor to then switch on the Roof, because McGregor's watching Morelos, and that just allows, after Cadden vacates Roof, that allows Roof to be free. But I wonder whether that just changing the formation once again maybe kind of played a little bit, maybe kind of confused the defence, or especially confused Cadden, and that kind of brought about the goal.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, Cadden's the player whose role changes has the biggest change when they shift that about. Do you know what I mean? If you're Paul McGinn and you're being asked to kind of shift from a right-hand centre-half to a right-back position, it's not really a big move. But when you're Cadden and you're basically occupying the full wide part of the pitch and then the centre and then the wide part and so on, it's bound to have an effect, because, yeah, you're even the most kind of astute player and the most kind of cerebral player who thinks about the game a lot is going to struggle to work out where they're meant to be, who they're tracking and all that. And yeah, I mean, Rangers bringing on Roof makes a difference as well in terms of just changing the threat that's there. But yeah, I think it's really disappointing. I think if you're down to 10 and you get worked around, you know, passes side to side and they just build an opening and stuff, you go fair enough. But yeah, the nature of both the goals they lost, I think, is really frustrating, because all three goals in the game actually come from like really poorly defended crosses. And it's not what you expect to see, I guess, like with two such high-level teams.
Yeah, you're right. The all three goals are pretty poor. Is there anything to say about Rangers before we move on? It's the same, isn't it? They've getting ground out another one.
It was nice to see Patterson getting a game, because one of the concerns I've had is that I felt like this was going to be a season for him. He's, you know, been in the Euro squad. If he wants to be, and fingers crossed we get there, and the starting right back at the World Cup, which is a possibility now at this point, he needs to start getting games under his belt. And so far this season, yeah, he had COVID and stuff, but I think this was his first start in the league this season, unless I'm mistaken. And it would have been a worry that when he did play, he was okay. There were still some issues with him, I would say, but the quality of the cross is really good for that goal, and he did start to show a little bit, because he's got players, he's got, you know, talk about Calvin Ramsey coming up the inside of him now as well. There's pressure at both ends in terms of him wanting to get in the Scotland team and the Rangers team, of course, and also wanting to keep his place in the squad. And that whole thing is kind of, it was good. I was pleased to see him getting a start, and I don't know whether it was, well, I can't have been resting players, and I mean, unless the opposite of thinking, you know, Tavernier was knackered from the amount of games he has played and stuff, but for him to be given the nod in a big game, I think is a promising sign for the season ahead for him.
Yeah, and also the Rangers kind of annoy me with Gerrard, where he's kind of like derisory, I don't know what the exact word it was, like derisory bid for Patterson from Everton when they bid 5 million. I think they also did an also bid 8 as well, and that was rejected.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if you're going to turn down £8 million for your right back, maybe give him a game.
I know
you've got a captain and arguably your best player at right back, but I mean, you could maybe do a wee bit more rotation.
But you wouldn't get £8 million for Tavernier, I don't think. Like,
I think you would.
That would be your limit. Do you know what I mean? You're not talking, and I know you're buying the finished article with him, and you're buying the potential with him, but it is kind of like, yeah, it's a hard player to displace, but it's also not like James Tavernier is like one of the best players in the Scottish Premiership of the last decade or anything. If Nathan Patterson is supposed to be, I think he'd be a good player and he'd play for Scotland and all that, or like more for Scotland. I don't think he's a world-class talent or even close to it, but if that was the case, then someone like James Tavernier is not an obstacle you shouldn't be able to dislodge, if you know what I mean. So I think it's good to see him playing, and it bodes well that perhaps he will be rotated in a bit more.
Right, let's move on for this game. We're sort of going to run out of time there, so we're going to have to kind of move a bit quicker. St Johnstone against Dundee. You watched this one. I've seen the highlights.
Yeah, it was a difficult game to watch for not really because of the football, but because they were both wearing the same colour strip. So that was a challenge. Like, probably in person, you wouldn't even have noticed, you know what I mean? But on the TV, it was kind of dark blue against light blue. And I'm sure they played in these strips in this match for years, like before TV was a thing and all that. And these clashes weren't an issue, but it did make it a wee bit difficult to follow, I've got to say. Especially, obviously, I was watching in Y Scout, and it's a lot of the wide cam you're watching on.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first thing that caught my eye from the game. A couple of interesting things for St Johnstone was O'Halloran playing right wing back, and I think we've talked about it a little bit more. You get a little bit more of what you would call out and out wingers beginning to play wing back, and it's because the position as a wing back now, you are more an attacking player than you are a defensive one. I thought he did really well in that role. I think he's been pretty good for the last, probably this year. Yeah, the whole of 2021, it's been a good year for O'Halloran, and when you thought he was maybe on his way out, and it's another way to use that squad. It's another option that they've given themselves. James Brown's out. Rooney's playing centre-back because I think Gordon's not available either. McCart was suspended. So you're looking at having to completely, you know, that back three of last season, none of them are there. But he's got Rooney, Ambrose and Dendoncker instead. Didn't have many issues. Dendoncker was, I mean, he was making his debut. He was quiet. I wouldn't have noticed anything that he did, if you know what I mean, good or bad. Ambrose was excellent. I think the back three suits him perfectly. You saw that at Hibs in particular when he played in that. He stood out. Was surprised it didn't work for him at Livy. But I think he's definitely going to be a good player for Saints this season. They were by far the better team. It did feel like a matter of time. I think that's the worst I've seen for the first hour anyway, the worst I've seen from Dundee this season. I didn't see the game when they got absolutely slaughtered at Celtic Park, but beyond that, I think it's the poorest I've seen them play. When they got the goal back, they then actually did turn it on a bit and actually had a pretty good chance to make it 3-2, which had that gone in, I was going to say you never know what happened. You do know what happened. They probably made it 3-3 each and then lost 5-3 anyway. But there were some things at that point, but the game was obviously gone. The biggest issue, I think, I've said it before, that St John to Dundee have is the fullback positions. You've still got Cammy Kerr in 2021 starting Premiership games as a wing back. Not good enough. Jordan Marshall.
I'll say still starting Liam Fontaine at centre-back in 2021 is a bit of an issue.
Yes, that too. And I mean, the defence, it's a bit ragtag. Sweeney looks okay, I think. But yeah, it's a bit thrown together. And Jordan Marshall, I think, is really good going forward. I like watching him, but he got found out a little bit. The two of the goals at least came down his side, both of Kane's goals in the first half. So there is a few of these types of things that I think would be a worry for Dundee. One thing I will say is, regardless of whether Dundee go up or down, I would expect Jordan McGee to still be a Premiership player next season. I've really liked watching him at the tail. Apart from when he was running the midfield, which relegated my own club, I've really enjoyed watching him since the kind of tail end of last season when he's moved into that position. And I thought he had a pretty good game in what was a tough task for him. So yeah, it's an interesting game actually. And St Johnstone, you can see are starting. I think we kind of all thought they would, but they're starting to. They won't be as good as last season, obviously, with the quality they've lost. But they're starting to show that, you know, they're probably going to be at least battling for the top six, which is what you've kind of come to expect from them in the last decade, really.
Yeah. No. Yeah, we all kind of just thought that St Johnstone were eventually going to kind of get their act together. Even I suppose it was a tiny bit of worry we kind of losing a couple of very kind of valuable players. But and I mean, people say like they've signed very well to get Ali Crawford in as a replacement for Amerikan. Like, he's that good a replacement, but he's fine. We know he's fine for this level, and he'll move into that system. He won't give him exactly the same player McCann, but he'll give them something, and that'll be enough. And the same with kind of like the defence as well. Like, nobody's going to be as good as Kerr, but if you can, like they're doing in this game, playing Rooney, yeah, because part of Kerr's, I don't think Rooney's as good a defender as Kerr. Well, he certainly isn't as good a defender as Kerr. But part of Kerr's kind of ability and why he's so good for St Johnstone is also kind of bringing the ball out from the back, from that right-sided centre-back. Rooney can do it as well. And we saw with the opening goal, Rooney played a great pass, which freed, I think it was a Hatlin, in the build-up to that goal. So, yeah, I think St Johnstone are going to be, yeah, top six. It's a crowded marketplace, but they'll give it a go.
Yeah. There's eight teams that could finish in the top six, I think, and they're definitely one of them. And we mentioned for Liam Craig and setting the new appearance record for St Johnstone, which is even more impressive when you consider they obviously had the wee spell away from Hibs in the middle of that. And 34 now, he's probably still got a couple of years in him as a squad player there. And so I think it was 442. You wouldn't be too surprised to see him maybe get to 500. It's certainly possible, I would say.
Is Lee Griffiths the saviour for Dundee?
Well, he wasn't playing here, so the answer would be no.
I meant when he's back.
When will he be back, though? It could be a long time. I thought the game I watched where he did play, what was the game? Livingston? Yeah, did they draw with Livingston? I can't remember. I watched a game of them recently.
Probably. I don't think they've won. So.
Yeah, well, they've not won yet, so they definitely didn't win. I don't think they lost either. It may have been a draw. I can't remember. Anyway, the game I watched of them, I thought he was...
Well, Livy haven't won either, so... Oh, no, they did beat Celtic.
I think it was 0-0 the game.
Livy have only got 4 points.
It was a good... I thought he played quite well in that game and he had a lot of shots. And so if he can keep having a lot of shots, you never know. Because if you have a lot of shots, you'll score some of them.
He's going to need to have a lot of shots. Same with him. And if they can figure out a way to put him and Cummins in the team again, because there's two quote-unquote goal scorers. I say quote-unquote because Cummins, there's not a huge amount of evidence at the top flight level or at any decent level. But... if they can get them to and they can figure out a way to work, they're probably going to need it because that, as we've just already mentioned, that defence is just pish, isn't it?
Yeah, there's just a lack of quality.
Right. Somewhere there is not a lack of quality, Tynecastle.
I'll just be quiet and let you talk now, Craig, because I think you've been choking to talk about this Hearts team.
Yeah, I've not really had the chance yet, have I? I didn't even think they were that great on Saturday. I thought the Motherwell came with their usual formation, the 4-3-3, so that gave them an extra man advantage in the centre of the park. Although saying that, Mikey Smith is kind of, I don't know what he's turned into recently, but he's almost kind of played like Ange Ball as well, because when he's attacking, he's not going down the line as much, and he's kind of driving inside a lot, and it seems to be working really well. So I suppose he does give them an extra man in the middle at times. But other than that, I kind of thought that it was hard for Hearts to kind of dominate possession in the areas they wanted to because of kind of Motherwell's work rate off the ball and due to the fact they had three kind of industrious midfielders in the centre against two Hearts once. So you've kind of, when you're kind of comparing and contrasting, they were always kind of going to have a slight advantage in there. Hearts still managed to do well for themselves in that area, despite the kind of one man down because Benny Beringame and Cammy Devlin are both so good that they can do the work of probably four men, let alone three. So there was that. I also thought that the front three didn't really function that well. I thought Boyce had a very good first half before kind of really dropping out of it in the second period. Ben Woodburn was pretty quiet, other than a couple of moments that made the kind of sports scene highlights. Mackay thought he had a good first half. He was another one that kind of faded in the second half. They didn't really link up as much as I would have kind of liked the front three to do, or at least as they have done in other games. So I think those are things that can be improved upon. And also as well, the defence is still missing Suter. Taylor Moore had another decent game, but he's not quite John Suter. And then Craig Halkett went off as well, which forced Stephen Kingsley, who was having an excellent game at left-sided centre-back in the centre of the defence, where he was kind of less productive there. So there's a few things that kind of went wrong, and yet Hearts won the game fairly comfortably. They were certainly helped out by Liam Kelly.
Yeah, I mean, that first penalty, I mean, first of all, it's so ludicrously rash. However, being rash doesn't make it a penalty. Did they actually hit him? I wasn't convinced.
I thought it was a dive at the game, but looking at it again on the highlights, I think he catches his trailing leg. I think Boyce is looking for it, and he might already be on his way down, but I think Kelly catches that trailing leg because he doesn't pull out the challenge quickly enough. Stupid thing to do. Just let him literally run the ball out the park. It's just like the only thing he was going to do in this situation.
And the free kick, like I've seen him criticised, I should be criticised for the free kick, but I can kind of understand that because I think he is genuinely puzzled. He's trying to work out whether Woodburn or Kingsley's going to hit the free kick, and so he's kind of almost in his mind going between them, are going to have to go left or right here. And so I think it's so natural to then, if Kingsley hits it, you're expecting it to go left the way he moves initially. So it's almost like he's thinking, right, if Woodburn hits this, I'm going right. If Kingsley hits this, I'm going left. And then he sees Kingsley hitting it, so he goes left, even though the ball's going right. And then he looks really stupid. But that's exactly, because it's not used very well by teams a lot, but that kind of wee bit of misdirection around who's taking the free kick works really nicely. And I think Levine is someone, Nielsen, he's like mini Levine anyway, but he's someone who will put a lot of time into set pieces and things like that. And so they're the types of things that you would expect Hearts will have that wee edge on. And yeah, I thought that was quite, even though it's just quite a simple misdirection, I think it's quite nicely done, and I think it does contribute to the goal.
Yeah, and to kind of talk about Hearts as well, to pick them up a bit more than I kind of have so far, is that, just talk about Benny and Cammy Devlin, like the two of them in the centre, it's kind of was the case for Haran and Benny early on the campaign. It's just having two guys like that who are just such great poise on the football. Always seem to find a man at Hearts top can, Benny especially, he's just got those snake hips where he can just kind of wriggle away from pressure. And both of them are just excellent at kind of winning the ball back and stopping the other team. And it just creates this wall that just kind of makes it impossible for opponents to play through Hearts. And then you've got the back three as well, all in really kind of good form. Even the guys that are subbing in. You talk about the first choice back three is probably Suter, Halkett and Kingsley. But then Cochrane can play left wing, left centre back when he does. He's solid there as well. Moore, when he plays on the right, he's solid. Like, there's no, and even in the midfield as well, Heron came on for the last 10 minutes and actually done a pretty good job. That was at the point in the game where Motherwell were really starting to increase the pressure and looked like they could get a goal back and make it a really kind of interesting last 8 minutes. And there was 5 minutes injury time as well. So that would have been a bit hair raising. But he came on, made a couple of big challenges, like which kind of re-energised the crowd a little bit and probably re-energised the team, and also won a couple of good fouls as well, kind of smart fouls, like Stephen Presley-esque fouls, which also took the pressure off and kind of stopped Motherwell's momentum. And it's just Hearts are going to, the challenge is still going to be, so the last two games have scored 5 goals at home, so that's kind of what you want to see. That he's still starting with these, as I was complaining on the campaign, these kind of wing-backs that are a bit more defensive minded than your kind of average, as you were saying, your wing backs. You'll see a lot these days of wingers playing there. These guys are certainly not that. But when they are playing at home, even though these guys are kind of defensive minded, he's given them freedom, Smith especially, to attack as much as he wants. So he's still got those sensibilities. So he still kind of helps the defence be solid, but he is getting forward to support. If that could continue to work, and because otherwise, if it doesn't, you are relying on just three players to really create stuff. And if they have games like they did on Saturday, where none of them play particularly brilliantly, I don't think any of them played badly, but I don't think any of them were that great either, then you might struggle to break down teams a little bit more. So that's still a little bit of a concern for me, but I'm certainly much more less concerned with that than the last time I talked about this Hearts team. And I was like, and I was basically saying, like, when Hearts play Motherwell, Livingston at home, you're going to have to play somebody a bit more attacking on either flank. He's not done that so far, and so far he's proven me wrong.
Okay, I'll put you on the line, Craig. What date are Hearts going to seal the title? April, March.
don't.
but I mean, I've been really impressed. I've been, from what I've seen, I think I had question marks about Nielsen at this level in terms of, like, he did well the last time, but this team seems to just be much better to watch than that one was.
Yeah, they certainly are. But I mean, the team last time was quite fun to watch to begin with. And then it kind of, after Seoul was sold, the football got a bit worse. It was weird though, his second season, like when before he left, that was really weird because we had a number of games. I think we drew two games, three all away from home, and had like two old draws at home, like before, and he left in November. So we're like racking up loads of goals in our games, but they weren't good to watch. It was quite bizarre.
So we should just be blocking off all transfer bids from, I was going to say China, is that where Seoul went? For Liam Boyce, and you'll be all right.
And Benny.
We'll wait and see.
He's been, is it that wild to say he's been the best midfielder in the league so far this season?
You would definitely say Celtic could do with him.
Yeah, 100%. I'd be very surprised if they're not in January with some ridiculously low bid. I should probably just talk briefly about Motherwell before we move on. We're kind of running out of time. We've still got two games to mention. But I should say, Motherwell, I think this was just a bit of a... They kind of got themselves in a hole with Kelly's two mistakes. And like the front three weren't great up until kind of just before the end of the half. Watt had that shot and then that chance, which was a better chance than I kind of gave it credit for after seeing it on the highlights. That was a really good opportunity when he just kind of... in front of goal, and if he catches it properly, he scores. So there was that. They were a bit better in the second half. Woolery came into the game a bit more. Van Veen didn't really do too much. What got busier as the game got on, but kind of it's just kind of one of those things that they dug themselves in a hole, two goals down. You know, the makeup of their team, they're still, you know, starting with that kind of industrious midfield three. It was going to be hard for them. You basically needed the forward line to really kind of create something special. Otherwise, they weren't going to get back in it because there just weren't really enough kind of creative players to get through that Hearts system. But they gave it a good go. They had periods of pressure in the second half. They did have a few chances. Wouldn't be too disheartened if it was Motherwell. I think that was what Graham Alexander was like after the game. You know, it's a way for home to a difficult side. They lost a couple of early goals, but they continued fighting. On another day, they might have been able to make things interesting for Hearts. But it's nothing to get too downbeat about after their very impressive run. Oh. Right, let's move on to... What's the other game you watched? Oh, yeah.
Livingston St Mirren.
1-0 victory for St Mirren. Another goalkeeper error this weekend, I would say. We didn't mention Macy not being too great for Manolis's one. Obviously, Liam Kelly was at fault for two goals, and then Max Stryak just allowing Ethan Erhon's pass to go into the far corner.
And a very similar one to come in the last game as well. But yeah, this was quite a good game, actually. I quite enjoyed it. I kind of thought when I was kind of thinking, you asked me what games I wanted to pick, I thought, well, if I pick that and you do Dundee County, they were two games I thought were going to be quite poor. We've divvied the bad games up. But actually,
yeah, and then for some reason I just watched Celtic instead.
Which was a really good game. But yeah, I enjoyed this one. The goal sums up what's good about St Mirren. I think they are organised, defend well, and when they hit in the break, they're quite incisive. I thought Ronan did fantastically well. He kind of brings the ball, it gets played to him kind of straight out of the tackle off the counter, and he manages to get it from just behind it and bring it into his stride so quickly, which means that he can stride away from Livingston and creates, I think it's like a 3-on-3. He then picked a really interesting pass. I love counter-attacks, so I could sit and watch counter-attacks all the time in terms of working out, you know, what's the right pass to do and all of that type of thing. I don't know if it's a logical side of my brain, but it's an interesting pass you don't see very often where it goes quite square with it, but it really works quite nicely because I can't actually remember who's running onto it. Marcus Fraser is running onto it from deep, which is always, it's always good fun when it comes from a corner as well, because you just get weird players in weird positions. Fraser comes onto it really well, and then he shuffles it out. And so it was really nicely done. The runners off the ball all did their job. Ultimately, though, it shouldn't have been a successful counter-attack because Ethan Erehon's shot is not that great. And it's one of the least explicable errors I could think of. Like, there's not really anything that should be putting Stryjek off. It's just a really poor shot and it just goes under him. It's really piss poor from him. And again, not for the first time, he seems to have a real mix of amazing saves and really good performances and then stuff like that. And yeah, it's just really poor, and it did cost the team the game. Jack Anik at the other end, you didn't get any of that from him. He made a couple of really big saves. I'm not saying he was like man of the match saves all over the place, but when they needed him, he was there. Stryjek, when he was needed, kind of let them down.
I don't really rate Stryjek. Like I said this last season when we done like a goalkeeper pod. Like I just think he's a bit overrated. I think he was overrated just by not being Robbie McCrory.
Yeah, he's big. He's big as well, and that can help. Sometimes people think, you know, he looks quite imposing, but still have to be good at goalkeeping. Erehon got the winning goal. I really like him as a player. I think you're starting to see shades of Kenny McLean in him. So it's a lazy comparison with the same club and so on. But left-sided midfielder, he's been shifted about a wee bit early on, but now he's kind of in his best position and he makes a lot of really good runs. He's really clever with the way he uses the ball and he's got quite a good brain on him, I think, Erehon. And so I do think they'll struggle to keep a hold of him long term. I think he's only still like 20 or 21. I'm not sure exactly what age he is, but he's a really good player. It's hard to say much more on St Mirren. I've watched them a couple of times now. I like them. They're solid. The players have took a wee bit of time to bed in, you know, which is surprising given it with a lot of players who have played at this level quite a lot. But now that they have and they seem to have a wee bit of a idea how they're playing, they've picked up some pretty good results recently, and Brophy is starting to do what you saw him do at Killy, which is he's not going to ever score loads of goals, but he's a pest. He leads from the front really well. You've got three really good centre halves. You know, I mean, McCarthy's excellent. I really like watching McCarthy play. The two on the side of him do everything quite well as well, and we've essentially got good players. They're all at least 6 out of 10 players. Most of them are just 6 out of 10 players. They're all playing where you want them to play and they're all doing it quite efficiently, and that's nice. The more interesting team is Livingston, because you go back 2 years and
bunch of angry short arses.
Well, yeah, exactly. And you go back that time and they used to be such a... They had such a clearly defined style of play that I really loved watching. You know, it was direct to the final third, and then it was kind of intricate in that final third. Now, obviously, I don't think you realised at the time quite how good London Dykes was. Like, you know, you think he's been good for them, but with where he's come from and how he'd done at Queen of the South, you're not exactly thinking, wow, this is one of the best strikers in the league. But in hindsight, he probably was the best striker outside the Old Firm at that point. He definitely was, actually, when you look at how much he did contribute to that team. Without him, they've really struggled. They kind of managed to get something going with Robinson in that role for a wee while. He obviously left, and they've never really been able to replicate that. I don't think Andrew Shinney is this false nine really works. They try it on and off. They try it on and off within games. There might be games like that Celtic one, but it works out well. But yeah, it's a lot of small players. They are really, really playing it out from the back a lot. That's fine. They were okay at it, but they didn't create loads of chances. They didn't create the same number of chances, and they completely lose that ability to score from set pieces and stuff like that. And Well, I say that Obalai had that really good chance from a set piece, but on the whole, they don't. They're not bad. They're not a bad team in the sense of when you watch them, you don't go, this team is really incompetent. But as you said earlier, I think they've got 4 points. That's not good. And I've said this for, I think, two or three teams. I think I've said it for Dundee. I've said it. I'm going to say it for Ross County. You can be not bad and you can keep getting away with bad, like good-ish performances when you lose, but you're still losing. And there's only so long people are patient with that. And I would be slightly worried with what Martindale said at the end, which was we were everyone's favourites for relegation. First of all, not true, I don't think. Not after finishing the top six two consecutive years, even if you've lost players. I don't think people immediately went to Livingston as their first choice to go down. And then he says, we are where we want to finish. You're 10th, like that's not where you want to finish. You might take it, but it's not where you want to finish when you're finishing the top six in the last 2 years. And I get that he's taking the pressure off the players and all that, but I would be worried about that.
Right, let's move on to our final game because we're running out of time. I've got a meeting for this week's review for the Terrace. It's starting very soon. We'll start to record the Patreon. So we've got one more game left. We didn't see it. We've seen the highlights and we know kind of it fits into the narrative. It's already there. You were kind of just touching upon it there. Ross County playing reasonably well, had a number of chances, could have got something from the game, had a goal disallowed, looked like it was deservedly disallowed from the angles that were available. That's another thing to bring up about VAR, as you mentioned it earlier. How many cameras are we going to get for games?
we need more anyway, otherwise you wouldn't be able to make a decision on that goal. But I agree with you, it looked offside.
Dundee United managing to win a game 1-0.
Yeah, and
those are the two narratives. County play well, not winning, and Dundee United scraping out a result.
I say we might be in the verge. I mean, me and you recorded the preview of Dundee United and we were a wee bit cynical about Thomas Courts, Tam Courts, whatever you want to call him. We might be having to eat our words because he's doing well. You can't argue with that. He's getting results. It might be 1-0, it might be boring. I think they're playing better football marginally than which wouldn't be hard from what they had last season. So fair play to them so far. It was another big mistake from a goalkeeper. Maynard Brewer came in again. Laidlaw had a poor start to season. I suspect he'll be back in the sticks for the next game. Baldwin mistake in the lead up to that goal will be slightly overshadowed. The result is a really poor header trying to clear that that ball that comes in. It's a big, if you're just trying to deal with a long ball and it happened to kill it at the weekend, it's like a big punt up the park. You need your centre half to just get rid of it. And if they don't, and at least a goal, I think that's one of the main things you're there for. So it wasn't great from him either. So yeah, I mean, United will be really happy. You cannot argue with the start they've had in County. Yeah, if you can't win a game of football and you're 8 games into the season now, it's not like, you know, it's not like a month in anymore. It's kind of getting to that point where like you do need to actually win a game, and they're not.
Yeah, it's what do we make of? Is there really anything to add about the kind of things, the kind of off-field stuff that's not happened already? Like there was an allegation from Jan de Fuchs that something racist was said to him from the County fans. Thomas Courts then full-time held up a T-shirt with "Show Racism Red Card" written on it. Malky Mackay answered back by saying it was interesting that he'd done this and was basically saying there was no proof, and to his understanding it was a misunderstanding because United's stewards and I think he said something, United officials as well, were in the stand with the County fans and didn't hear anything. And I think the County fans at the game said there wasn't that many of them, so had something been heard, it would have been easy to kind of pick up, and they wondered whether things were maybe misunderstood. But at the same time, still not the best of responses from Malky, I would have said as well, where he could have just said, okay, let's just wait and see what happens. There's going to be an investigation. If something's been said that is unacceptable, it'll be dealt with. He didn't say that.
The whole thing is like, I can quite happily believe there could be a misunderstanding like that. The climate we're in, the culture we're in and stuff, people are quite sensitive. The topic is quite a big topic in football at the moment. So you can imagine a player thinking he said something and being quite upset by it. And you have to respect that. And it has to be investigated. And if they're saying it was kind of already investigated quite promptly, I'd like to think they'll do further investigation, but it's entirely possible that, you know, a player just misheard something, misunderstood something. These things do happen. Happened with Ross, well, again, maybe it didn't, but it happened with Ross County with Michael Gardine last season, but something happened with an alleged homophobic.
There was something at a Hearts game as well, where it was kind of Hearts Kelly, where there was kind of suggestions that a Hearts fan had abused Josh McGuinness, which ended up, I think, being a bit inaccurate or something.
Yeah, so these things do happen, but it's important that they're taken seriously, and it's important that if you're Malky Mackay of all people, right, just shut up about it. Just don't, at the very least, don't be like belligerent about it. Just be like, okay,
right, don't bristle at it.
Yeah, it's like you've with your history of all the managers to say anything about it, you don't have the authority to comment on that issue, basically. Essentially, is what it comes down to. That may be unfair on him if he's genuinely repentant and all that, but you don't have the authority to comment on that. So don't just say, as you said, we'll wait and see what happens. Obviously, we hope there wasn't anything racist said. We'll fully investigate it, blah, blah, blah. Courts, I don't think you can be critical of him. He's just trying to defend his player. He's making a point. He's making a statement. Is he kind of going out of his way to antagonise people? Yeah, he probably is. But if you are being antagonised by an anti-racist T-shirt, I think that's your problem. there is a sense of that. Like, I don't really have an issue with that. And I was very more worried, like Mackay as well, you can say heat of the moment and all that, but Stephen Ferguson putting out a statement, it's like, just stop when you say, make the statement of, we think it's been investigated, we don't think any of our fans committed anything, you know, fine. Stop your statement there. You don't need to go in any further than that, which he did. And it's not good coming out of Ross County just now. It's just like, you need to understand that you've already got that. You've put that massive spotlight on yourself by hiring Mackay. I'm never one that's going to say that someone shouldn't have the right to work again and stuff like that. Like, if they want to employ him, I may not be happy about it, but I'm not going to say that he shouldn't be employable. But he does at least have to understand, and the club need to understand the sensitivity around that, and to just kind of blunder on through and pretend everything else is rosy with them, yeah, it kind of leaves a bad taste.
Right, Craig, that's everything. That's all the time we've got for today. Thank you very much for joining me.
Oh, cheers. Sorry, I was kind of thinking you were rounding up, and then I'm like, no, I've not said goodbye yet. Goodbye, everyone.
And yeah, thank you for listening. We're about to record the Patreon where Craig's going to moan about Kilmarnock. So if you want to hear that, then head over to patreon.com/terracepodcast. That's going to go in the £2 a month tier. Only £2. Come on, get involved. But yes, thank you once again for listening, and we'll be back on Thursday. Cheers. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.